It's the Mike Tech Show, show number 472. This show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com. This show is brought to you in part by Instant House Call. Remotely support your customers unattended and on demand through firewalls. Try it free by clicking the link on my website at miketechshow.com and use the promo code MikeTechShow. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Mike Smith. Thank you very much for downloading and subscribing to the show. Please visit the main website at miketechshow.com. You can email me questions and suggestions for show topics. My email address is miketechshow@gmail.com. You can leave me a voicemail message. The phone number is 240-949-2450, and that's Mike Tech Show, all one word, on Skype. You can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/miketechshow. Facebook, follow me, facebook.com/miketechshow. And you can check out the wiki. It's all updated. I want to thank Barbara, who's Citizen X in the chat, for maintaining that and keeping that in order. Thank you so much. And that is at mtswiki.com. There you're going to find links to all of the show notes and the audio from all the past shows. It's a great resource for the Mike Tech Show. Tonight's show, I have a couple follow-ups with some links on migrating your profile that I asked for suggestions, so I have some follow-ups there. A couple tips on some things that I had to solve this week with clients. And then we're going to talk about music for Windows and the Mac and utilities that I've used over the past couple weeks and some things that I've been doing. It's just been a great. And the show sort of evolved based on some of the links and some of the programs I've been using this week. And as I was gathering it all up, I was like, wow, I said, this is great content for the show. So no voicemail or email this week, and I'll catch up with that next week. And I know I have a couple voicemails waiting for me on Skype and a stack of email, but I will get to it all. The first thing I want to discuss is migrating profiles. If you're moving a user from one domain to another domain, or maybe you're demoting a computer from a domain to make it just a standalone workstation and not part of a domain. Well, the profile on your desktop that holds all of your links to where your My Documents are saved and everything that you do, that changes drastically. You get a whole new profile when you have a new domain. So how do you just get that information over? It's something that I have been reading and looking at for years, and there's no perfect answer. I know that. So what's the best utility or procedure that's going to get me closest to this working perfectly, to where I can migrate a domain and have that user's profile migrated and not lose anything? In the past, and I'm still going to go to this if the utility doesn't work, I use FABS auto backup, but that can take some time, backing up everything and then putting it back. You figure there's got to be an easier way. The first link for tonight, and this is from Dan R. in the chat, he sent this to me and he said, Mike, give this utility a try. He's used it and it's worked. And it's FORENS IT. It allows you to not only share profiles, but it's a user profile manager 2.5. Assign a single profile to a group of users. Specify that user and group. Should use temporary profiles, create backup profiles, and quickly set a new default, rename profiles. Hopefully, this product is going to help me when I back up the profile and I get to put it in place and restore it to the new domain, I'm not going to have any issues. So thank you, Dan. I am going to try that utility with this project coming up where I'm going to be installing a brand new server and creating a new domain. Now, Stephen from Ireland wrote in with this procedure, and I am going to put this for these steps, I'm going to put in a text file uploaded to my website so you can link to it. So you don't have to worry about writing these steps down. You'll be able to go to the website and download it. He says, with regards to migrating profiles, what we have done on occasions is change the registry path for the local profile to point to a new location of the local user on the new domain. You are swapping the location of the old domain profile and putting it in place of the new domain profile. Disjoin the PC from the old domain. Join the PC to the new domain. Log in as a user onto the PC on the new domain and then log off. Log back on as administrator. Open regedit, and then he has a registry change that has to be made. Under the profile list key, there will be subkeys named with the SIDs of the users who have logged onto the computer. To find the profile information for the user whose locally cached profile you want to move, find the SID for the user with the getSIDEXE utility. Inside of the appropriate user subkey, you will see a string value named profile image path. Profile image path should be set to the local path where you want to store the profile. Change the profile image path of the new domain user to point to the image path of the old domain user. Log off and log on as the new user on the new domain, and you should see the desktop and documents, etc., of the old domain user. I have used this on many different occasions and have saved a lot of time. Never had any issues with it. Wow. And that's free. So I want to thank Stephen. I'm going to be armed with the utility that Dan recommended, this procedure, and still my fallback is Fabs. I'm in great shape now as I go into the migration on the weekend of September 7th, and I guarantee you I will be talking about that on the Thursday night after that migration, and I'll let you know which one worked best and how I made out with this. I want to talk about a couple utilities and techniques, some things that I had to deploy this week in order to solve some problems. The first one is with the COO of one of my bigger clients, and he lives in Brooklyn and commutes to the Philadelphia area 3-4 times a week. He needed a solution that he would always go home with his laptop and then have to sync and merge everything with his desktop. He got a brand new laptop. He's retiring his old laptop and his old desktop. And we've set up a great docking station and large secondary monitor at both his house and the office. So he wanted me to come out to the house and be able to get this all finalized and set up and make sure everything works. And so my oldest son and I came with me. We went to Brooklyn. Great day. By the way, he treated us to lunch, and I had the best corned beef and pastrami in the world. He got up early in the morning, went to Katz's Delicatessen in Manhattan, which is the greatest deli in the world, and brought back corned beef and pastrami that it just melted in my mouth, and I had to mention that. With that, we're getting everything working. I used my Fabs Auto backup and Outlook, moved everything, got all the PSTs, got literally 60 gigs of data off his desktop, got everything hooked up. And now I went to go launch Outlook, and it's the first time that Fabs ever failed me. It could not find the path to the PSTs. So that's okay. Usually it pops up with a dialogue box, and I go over and I point to where it is, because FABs, you pick a profile ID, and the profile ID was 123. It wasn't his name. So, of course, on the new computer, the profile is his name. FABs did its job, but when I went to go point to everything, and I thought it was great, that PST, no matter what I did, would not be shown in the advanced options of each email setting. And of course, he has 8 email accounts, and I am trying to point to the proper PSTs. It seems like it matches up, but it does not work. And I can't send or receive email. And I keep getting the error that it cannot, you know, store any messages in the PST. I had to shut down Outlook, recreate a brand new profile from scratch. It was the only way to do this. I had my client open up his laptop and read off to me every setting for as I would type it, and we would test sending a message. That took a couple hours, you know, making sure that was all worked out. But that was very important because he lives and dies by email. Okay, that's one. So had a little gotcha there. Here's the second gotcha. He uses his icons like I've never seen. He lines up. He has multiple companies that he's running, and his icons are little folders named for different things, and they're set in a special location, and he uses those groups of icons as his workflow. So he may change an icon that's something he has to work on first and then next and etc. So his icons are very important. So now, if you have a 15-inch laptop acting as the secondary display on a docking station with a 25-inch monitor off to the side, guess what happens when you undock? The icons get scrambled, and you can't preserve the icons. We worked on this for a couple hours. This was a showstopper for him. I had to solve this. So we parted on Saturday with this as a takeaway, that I had to find a way that regardless of the resolution, docked or undocked, he could preserve the location of those icons. And I found the program, and it's free, and it's called Icon Restorer. And that link will be in the show notes. And Icon Restorer is a very simple program. You run it, and you basically pick, after all of your icons are set up and it works 32-bit and 64-bit, you can save your current desktop layout. Then, if anything goes wrong, you can restore it, and you can save 2 layouts, and it works with multiple monitors. So multiple monitors, multiple resolutions. When I was back in the office to meet him on Monday, he had told me he spent all day Sunday trying to work this out. He says, Mike, I'm ready to give up this laptop and go back to the old way I was working unless we get this solved. I had the answer. Solving that made life so much easier. And it's amazing how certain people, there are certain tweaks, certain things that they have to have. And I have never seen anyone work with that, but it makes perfect sense when you see the way he has everything lined up. And to move resolutions, it also makes sense that the icons are displaced. There was no rhyme or reason. He could move some icons, close and open up, and the icons are back where he moved them from. It was very disturbing watching how, by default, how Microsoft works when you're migrating from one resolution to another. So what brought sanity to the situation is this utility. And if you know someone or you're in this situation, you're going to love it. And again, that's Icon Restore. I am so glad that saved me. Something else that I ran into, Windows 8, if you need to disable the user account control, you can't just go to user accounts and take the slide bar and move it down. Even though it's there, that does not work. In Windows 8, you have to edit the registry. And this came into play on my laptop when I needed an Oracle client installed for the ERP system that I'm using for a client. And they went over the procedure with me, tech support, for the software. And they said, oh, you're Windows 8? You got to go into the registry and you got to change this registry key. And it's the only way in Windows 8 to properly disable user account control. So I figured I would share that. The rest of the podcast is dedicated to all things music. And we're going to talk about different utilities that I've come across this week and why. And I figured I would also mention, how do I play the intro and outro? I'd mention that software. And what do I use to manage my music library and play music on Windows and on my Mac? So I figured I would talk about all of this. So here's where this all came from. On my iMac, I finally decided to put all of my music together in one silo. I used to have two kind of depots, one on the iMac and then one on Windows, and I needed to get all my music together in one place. And when I was done getting rid of all duplicates, I have 160 gigs of MP3s organized by artist, then the year and the CD or album title and list it. I have lots of discographies. If you follow me, you know I love Sinatra, I love Pearl Jam, and I have everything they've ever done, and especially Sinatra. I mean, I have 119 CDs and albums ripped as MP3s in my library. And now Pearl Jam, they have so many bootlegs, I don't have every one of their concerts, but I have a lot. So now all of this is now collected and sitting on my iMac. Well, something I discovered, and I know a lot of you know this, Apple came out with this iTunes Music Match, and it's only $24.95 for the whole year. And I looked at this, and I said, for a $24.95 investment, they are going to match every one of my songs, which, by the way, are 30,000 songs. So they're going to match 30,000 songs in the cloud for me for that one flat rate? Well, go ahead. Let's see what they can do. Now, when I set this up, it obviously took overnight and into the morning for it to properly update. They found, and I kid you not, 25,000 songs of my 30,000 they were able to match. I think maybe it was a little less. But when I seen it, they were uploading 5,000 songs. Apple uploaded 5,000 songs that they didn't have in their library that I had. And now every one of my songs is available via the default music player on any of my Apple devices. So my iPad, my iPhone, they're all available and all sortable. I can make playlists. I can do everything. My entire 30,000 songs, my entire library is now available to me online wherever I'm at. That was pretty cool. And I wanted to share that because with that size library, if you have a library smaller than that and you have an Apple account, man, that works. You know, it really works. When I was doing this and going through that this week, that led me into a couple things that I discovered, and one of them was with my client on Saturday while we were waiting for the copying to happen with Fabs, with the 60 gigs, where a lot of it was music, is being moved over to the external drive. My client's son whipped out his iPhone and opened up an app called Shazam. This is so cool. I didn't even realize this technology existed. My son Ryan opened up his app on his Android the next day called Hound Dog. So we have Shazam and Hound Dog, and they both work in the iPhone world and in the Android world, their apps. You basically have any music playing, you touch the app, and it can determine exactly the artist that's playing. It brings up the CD that it's from. You can get the lyrics. You can tag it. You can save it for later. So you could be in the car, have your phone going, and I can have my satellite radio playing. I can hit Shazam. Maybe there's a song playing, and I'm like, ooh, I want to save that for later. Or maybe when I purchase it or download it or, you know, wherever. And you can hit that, and it saves it, and it is phenomenal. I was blown away at how accurate and how quickly it can get you all of that information. I was very impressed. So again, two apps. I'm using Shazam right now, but I got to admit, when I seen my son use Hound Dog, that was pretty cool. There's another one called Music Match that Jerry has just put in the chat. So I will make sure that all of these will be listed in the show notes. Now I have my iTunes library where I imported that 160 gig, which then adds literally another 160 gig on my hard drive. Thank God it's a 3 terabyte drive. All that music, how do I play the music on my Mac? And then what do I do when I'm on Windows? So I figured I would share that. I play music from an app called Soundbite. I learned of this years ago doing my podcast where Mark Shepard, who hasn't been in the chat, he stopped in a couple weeks ago. He's a Mac guy, listener, and years ago turned me on to Soundbite. It's such a cool app. Radio stations actually use it. It's called what they term a cart player. So it's basically a cart with slots that you drag and drop music to it, and I just touch it, and the music will play. Just, this is a sample. So I'm going to touch Make Me Smile from Chicago. Okay, that intro, all I did was reach over and just click that, and it started playing. And my iMac has a cable that connects directly to my mixer. Well, you can also open up and create playlists. Now, when I was doing this and I met Carrie Holzman early on years ago, he incorporated this for the radio station and for Computer America. That's how they started using to insert commercials. Lots of radio stations use this software called Soundbite. It's $39 for the year, so yes, every year when there's an upgrade or whatever, I'm paying the $39 or whatever the upgrade fee is. Well worth it. And you don't have to upgrade. I mean, you could just pay the $39, get the version you have, and don't upgrade. It's great, and the license is available for Mac and Windows. So I'm using it on my Windows machine and my Mac, but predominantly it's my Mac. You can open up playlist and drag and drop all my music, and I can do that right in the playlist and play. That's how I play from my Mac. I can also use iTunes, and since that's where my whole library is on the Mac, now that's shared out and available to me from Windows. So if I'm on Windows and I want to play some music, believe it or not, I use the program default for Windows, the music player for Windows. I literally don't use anything else. By the way, Soundbite if you go to find it, the link will be in the show notes. It's from a software company, Black Cat Systems. The cart player, Soundbite, cannot play FLAC. So if I obtain music in the format FLAC, I got to convert that to an MP3. Or I could convert it to a WAV. So now, back on my Windows side here, I play FLAC music in VLC. If you have not used VLC, when you're done listening, download it. This audio video player requires no codecs. Whatever you throw at it, it plays it. If you had things that did not play, once you download VLC, you'll be able to play it. VLC spans all platforms. You can get it for the Mac, Windows, Linux. I have been touting and promoting VLC for a long time. It's the ultimate player. Now, if I want to get that FLAC formatted music and I want to move it to my Mac to be able to play under Soundbite, I got to convert that music. And the program I use is DB Power Amp. That software integrates right into the shell of my operating system. And this is how I use this every week to take the WAV format when I'm done editing my show in Audacity. I save it as a WAV. I then take DB Power Amp and I tell it to set it at 128 kilobytes for the bit rate, and I just right-click on the file, convert to an MP3. A minute later, I have an MP3. With FLAC, I can point to all the FLAC files, right-click, say convert to MP3. This program will take advantage of multiple processors and all of your memory. It is phenomenal. I've never seen anything convert music at such quality and extremely fast. You can see the usage of each processor. It'll have a great chart on the screen where it shows maybe I'm converting a whole album, so maybe worth of music, maybe there's 13-14 songs. You can see each one of the songs being ripped and converted, each one using a different processor. Now, a lot of you say, well, boy, if you have Audacity, why are you not saving it with the lame plugin for an MP3? I've done that, and guess what? The quality is not the same. I've done a test many, many times where I've saved the MP3 from Audacity, and it does not sound as good as a WAV converted DB Power Amp from WAV to MP3. Unbelievable. And I have done that multiple times. I've tested. I know it doesn't make sense, but it does. When you listen, the audio quality is different when I'm converting using DB Power Amp, and that's why I go through that extra step rather than saving it right from Audacity. It takes me an extra couple minutes, but it's worth it for the quality. A lot of you have noticed a degradation of the sound quality a little bit in the podcast, whether it be Tech Vets or the Mike Tech Show. I apologize for that, and that's because of the mixer that I upgraded to, or I shouldn't say upgraded, that I introduced into the mix here. It's a newer Mackie, and it's a USB interface, and I believe a significantly less efficient and significantly less quality than my FireWire Mackie mixer. As soon as I have time, I'm going to bring that into the fold back in, since I have the new system that Carrie built for me. I believe that with FireWire, I'm not going to have the lockups and the hangups. That was a problem during the live show. I got a lot going on here, lots of things happening. But I now have multiple computers that I can offload some of the processing from the video and the audio. And being able to offload some of that, I've reduced the amount of chances of locking up. And I got a much more powerful computer system. So I am going to bring back that higher quality FireWire Mackie mixer, and the audio quality will be back to my standard, which, you know, I am a perfectionist when it comes to the audio. So now we have DB Power Amp, where I can easily convert MP3s to FLAC, WAV to MP3, no matter what audio format you throw at me, I can convert it to any other format. I have that because of all the audio that I'm involved in, and it makes it really easy for me to be able to then handle all the different audio formats. So you have to have a great utility like that at your disposal if you're involved in audio like I am. And I have all these different formats, and I need to get them in the one nice format. Now, I will say, when I convert from the FLAC, I'll go to the highest MP3 format that you can save at, and I'll use the 320K bitrate. I have at least, okay, it's not the standard of FLAC, which is very high quality. WAV, of course, is your best, but it also takes up the most space. When you're dealing with audio, you want that, what's the best bang for the buck? The right size versus the space that it takes up. So I found the 320K MP3 to be of good quality and a good trade-off with the size of the file. There's audio files out there that I know that's not acceptable, and they're going to want WAV format and or FLAC and take up more space, and that's okay. Hard drive space is cheap, so why not? I seem to like the MP3s. It's more portable for me and the way I work. I use Windows Media Player to play my music on Windows. I'll use VLC if it's a format that Windows Media Player can't handle. And I also have Soundbite available, which I've occasionally used on my Windows system. And then on my Mac, it's Soundbite and iTunes. To summarize, utilities for your portable devices to determine, hey, what's that music I'm listening to? Maybe I'm listening to the post show of the Mike Tech show, and he's playing some music. You can whip out your iPhone, your Android phone, run Shazam, or run SoundHound, and click, and you'd be able to pick up all the information of maybe that music I'm playing. And you can save that and then go later and say, oh, that's the song I want to download, or I want to purchase on iTunes, or purchase from Amazon and download it. So I hope those utilities help you if you've never heard of them. I know I did. And so as soon as I ran into them, I was like, wow, I got to have these. I'm catching some of the chat. When I get a CD and I want to rip it to an MP3, I use CDX. That's CDEX. That, to me, still is one of the best software programs for ripping music accurately, being able to tag it properly, and have great sound quality that you get to pick what format you want it ripped at, where do you want it ripped, where does it go, to what directory. It's a great program, and I've been using that for years, and I still pull that out, and when I get a CD, that's how I add it to my library. I pop it in, and I still get CDs. So or maybe someone will lend me one, or someone will give me a CD. I still deal with CDs. I know they're going away. Everything's digital now. And even in the pre-show, we were talking about movies, and I don't even purchase DVDs anymore. I can just go online and make the purchase, and then it's available to me high def on my TV or on my computer systems or on my iPad. Everything's changing, and we're living in a digital world, so how do you manage and maintain your digital libraries is becoming important. Having all this storage and taking up all of this space, make sure you back it up. I have all my music on my iMac. I have an external terabyte drive that is only used with Time Machine. I have a multiple terabyte drive connected to my Windows machine and I'm using Shadow Protect Desktop to back up all of my files and everything on my Windows machine. You have to have a good backup of all of this digital content. Maybe you're into pictures and you got tens of thousands of pictures. You don't want to lose them. Make sure you're backing it up. So you need a good place to store and be able to retrieve and play and edit, whether it be photos, files, or music. And then you want to also make sure you're backing it up. It's managing your digital life. And that's this little just sliver of tonight's podcast is hopefully helping you manage your digital music maybe a little better, or giving you some ideas. I hope I help. A reminder, if you like to download music and purchase it, use my Amazon link. Even if it's one song, go to amazon.micnation.net. Interesting thing. You go to my Amazon link, you know I get a significantly higher commission if it's non-electronics. So remember, you can go to Amazon and buy anything. Sure, the electronics, that's great. And you can get great prices and incredible service from Amazon. But if you buy like Scott's Turf Builder or diapers or anything, I actually get a higher commission off that non-electronic items. Electronic items are capped at 4%. It can go higher for non-electronics. So that's great. I want to thank everybody for using my link and making your purchases from Amazon using my link. It really helps support the show, and I really appreciate that. And, of course, in the show notes, there'll be the Amazon link, also Fab's Auto Backup for Tech, and Malwarebytes Pro. You know, these are the core programs at the core of what I use for consulting and for helping others. And great programs, and please use my links. And don't forget Instant House Call, the most incredible remote access service and software that you could ever use for supporting your clients. I have some music for tonight. Last week, we started talking about cover songs. And as we were talking about cover songs for the post show tonight, I've lined up lots of music, the cover and then the original. I wanted to pull out something that maybe you haven't heard. You know my love for Sinatra. I have lots and lots of, I can listen to Sinatra all day. But did you know in 1969, he recorded the cover song of the Beatles tune Yesterday? Give a listen to this version and then we'll wrap up.
Yesterday, all my troubles seem so far away. Now it looks as though they're here to stay. Oh, I believe in yesterday. Suddenly, I'm not half the man I used to be. There's a shadow hanging over me. Oh, yesterday came suddenly. Why she had to go, I don't know, she wouldn't say. I said something wrong, Now I long for yesterday. Yesterday, love was such an easy game to play. Now I need a place to hide away. Oh, I believe in yesterday. I said something wrong. Now I long for yesterday. Yesterday, love was such an easy game to play. Now I need a place to hide away. I believe in yesterday. Yes, I believe in yesterday.
That, of course, Frank Sinatra doing Yesterday. And I will have a link where you can download that song right from Amazon. I want to thank everybody for downloading and staying subscribed and supporting the show. Thank you so much. And I'll be back next week. Same time, same channel. Have a great week, everybody. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to The Mike Tech Show, a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Please visit techpodcast.com.